This is a replay of the Wednesday night, November 19th WGN show. We started at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together, and the first hour will definitely be a delight. We're going to talk to Steve Probst again. And yet, he's the guy I always say when Steve is on, he's the one to ask, because I know something about obscure soul and R&B and Southern California records and more, but not a lot. The guy who wrote the book, literally in this case, and book is plurals, many, is Steve Probst. And we always have links on Raleigh.net. But I know we're trying to stand the other night, who I think will be calling in, plenty to talk about, and we'll also pick up from what we were doing last month, but it's been about 3 months. So Steve, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you, Raleigh.
It's always fun. So, you know, I wasn't going to talk about this until Stan called Monday and asked me, he said, are the Majestics from Detroit the same Majestics who are from Florida? And I said, no, because the Miami Majestics, that was an early incarnation of Sam Moore before there was Dave Prater. And,
right.
But I, you know, want to check my own self. So I go actually to discos. Why not? And the first thing I find is they've got over 25 groups called the Majestics, all spelled the same way. And I thought to myself, is this the most used band name ever when it comes to soul and R&B? How many can you recount?
Well, there was a group with a hit called the Falcons, and I think every city had a band or a group called the Falcons. That's,
okay.
The You're So Fine group, but
sure.
There was the Falcons on Savoy well before the You're So Fine group, and I think there were quite a few groups with that name. I don't know. You know, bird groups, you have a limited number of choices. There was only one group called the Crows, for instance. There was only one group called the Ravens, because they each had national hits.
Right.
But before you have your national hits, there's going to be bands and groups with a name they think is unique. And it'll probably be unique in their market, but not in every market. So
that's your take on it. Well, you know, it's interesting because the Majestics, you know, you say there's one in every market. No, in some cases there are three and four in every market. And
you're right. But there's only one Penguins. Who else would?
Right, exactly. But I was curious about this, and so of course I was real curious about the Majestics, who had been on Linda, you know, one of Eddie Davis's label. And I come to find out that, like I say, in East LA alone there were actually three of them, and Chick Carlton was in two of them, and of course Barry White was in one of them. Some of them,
yeah.
One group had been the Atlantics, and another.
Yeah, there were two Atlantics groups, a Hispanic group and a black group that involved Barry White. And Gaynell Hodge.
Right.
And but Eddie Davis would mix and match them. He'd put out those songs under different group names. So it's a little on the confusing side. But he liked the Atlantics, I think, because Atlantic Boulevard was a throughway through East LA.
Major cruise in the corner of Atlantic and Whittier Saturday nights. Be there, be square. Yeah. Yeah, done that many a Saturday night, so that's...
And it's still happening.
Is it really?
Watch what happened after the Dodgers won the World Series. And you'll see a lot of activity at Atlantic and Whittier.
Oh, man.
Now they're doing donuts and spin-outs and that sort of thing. But back then it was cruising. Well, it's still cruising. It's developed into a multi-purpose intersection.
Well, yeah, Atlantic and Whittier on Saturday nights, and then, of course, Van Nuys Boulevard on Wednesday nights. Is that still going on?
I really haven't kept track of it. Near where I live, Bellflower Boulevard and, Bellflower Boulevard and Bellflower still has a scene.
Do they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a narrow four-lane street, so you get a lot of, you get up close to the people that are checking you out. Yeah, the Sheriff's Department sort of tried to put the kibosh.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to talk more about East LA groups because you mentioned the Atlantics and stuff like that. But I understand from our buddy who always reminds me what your phone number is and when you're on the air, and I greatly appreciate that. And
Dave,
that's right, Edgar. You betcha. And that's a lot of fun. And he said, well, last time when you got off the air, you're about to talk about war. So I thought,
okay, here we go. Yeah. I interviewed Lonnie Jordan. He's the one remaining original member of the band War that still is entitled to use the band name. There was a big legal brouhaha, and now the bulk of the other guys, well, several of the guys are no longer with us, but the remaining members have to use the moniker of the Lowrider Band. They can't use the name War. But Lonnie Jordan was telling me a whole bunch about how they got started. But here's an interesting story about, the song Spill the Wine. Obviously.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously. That's probably the signature song. But, I know they're originally from Long Beach, and I want to go back all the way to the creators. But go ahead.
Yeah, okay, we can do that. Before we do that, let me tell you about Spill the Wine.
Okay.
That was their first release under their name. It was a duet. Eric Burden of the Animals sang lead on that. And I think he was just improvising a thing about a gnome or a guy in the field. And, I don't remember the original lyrics, but it had nothing to do with Spill the Wine.
Right.
But what happened was, during the recording session, he brought in a girlfriend by the name of Carmen. Now, as Lonnie Jordan told me, I never saw her face. That was the problem that night.
Oh, no.
Eric was in the singing booth against the wall. She had beautiful hair. I never saw her body. I just saw her head. Oh. Here I am behind the board in the control room. Okay. I was smoking weed, watching the back of Carmen, watching Eric sing. I was hypnotized, dazed, and confused. Started pouring this wine into a styrofoam cup. All of a sudden, I saw it spill on the board, started smoking. Everybody jumped up. Eric thought it was a joke, started singing, "Spill the Wine." So that's why halfway through the song, which had nothing to do with wine prior to when that happened, it became Spill the Wine because that's what Lonnie Jordan did, and it cost him $25,000 to pay for the board that he wrecked by spilling the wine in it.
Well,
cha-cha-cha.
I love that, sir. Hopefully the record made up for that 25 grand, but that explains it because I remember the opening. I was once out strolling one very hot summer day when I thought I'd lay myself down to rest in a big field of tall grass. I laid there in the sun and felt it caressing my face, and as I fell asleep, I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie, and I was the star of that movie. This really blew my mind. Yeah, I know all of it. And,
there's no mention of wine or spilling anything in the first half of the song.
No, exactly right. There I was, taken to a place, the Hall of the Mountain King, stood up high on the mountaintop, naked to the world in front of every kind of girl.
Right. But Spill the Wine kicked in when Lonnie Jordan spilled the wine.
Right. That's so funny because, of course, in the song, it's after the crazy girls, the tall ones, the short ones, the brown ones, all that. And when one whispered in my ear something crazy, she said, "Spill the wine."
Right. And she probably, and then you heard her in the background.
Yeah.
You hear her voice.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That's your inside story. That's your inside scoop for the night. 1969, I think.
Too bad there wasn't a music video.
Yeah, well, I think Lonnie Jordan took the video in his mind and was able to recount it. At least help me visualize it. You know, I can see Carmen and Eric in their respective poses as Eric is singing at the microphone. Yeah, he was having a good time.
That's hilarious.
So that's the story of War's first record, Spill the Wine.
And that was at Wally Hyder, I think. That board would have been okay, all right.
In fact, it was right next door. This Lonnie told me more. Right next door to Shelly Man's Jazz Club.
Okay.
While Eric was trying to create the lyrics, you could hear Hampton Hawes and Milt Jackson next door through the wall. I was trying to hear next door and hear them next door and do the track. So it was a jazz combo recording next door at Wally Heyer's studio. Oh man, yeah, that's the add-on to the story.
Well, that's great, and you know that's the kind of thing that came together and would make it a hit. It's not the kind of thing that could ever be recreated. Hopefully they didn't sing it differently on 12 tracks that are on CDs we don't want to hear, because it sounds like what we got on that 45 was the best take there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I think it was a one-take record, in fact.
Yeah, and I can see why. Yeah, right. And 70s, you know, they were really, really big. And I guess it was, and you would know more than I would, Jerry Goldstein, who got the Animal Guy, Eric Burdon, together with the creators originally. So that was sort
it
of...
Was a, that a, it was at a club in North Hollywood.
Okay.
The creators had recorded for our friend Magnificent Montague, you
mm-hmm.
know, a real taskmaster when it came to dealing with groups. So, you know, they were, you know, they had to, it was Montague's way or the highway. And there were a couple of singles put out under the name The Creators. He also recorded them as the Packers, which I don't think they were on Hole in the Wall.
No.
That was, Axton from...
Right, from Memphis.
Yeah, from Memphis.
Right.
And where was I? I lost my train of thought. Oh, Jim Stewart.
Right.
And that was basically, I think, the... what's your understanding? Booker T and the MGs, and I think Leon Haywood was part of it. And, you know, he was a very talented organ player and musician.
I think that Charles Axton was in the Marquees, and that was also the same area, and that's how it originally got formed. But, yeah, Booker T was in it, and Steve Cropper and Al Jackson Jr., so, yeah, it was your usual Stax, guys, period.
Well, yeah, but when you listen to the instrumental, it's basically the in crowd.
Yeah, well.
Oh, somebody ripped off a song. That's never happened before.
That's never happened. No, of course.
But then he issued one thing called Pink Chiffon under the name The Packers, and that was the creators. But their potentially big record never happened because it was called Burn, and it came out just at the same time as the Watts riots, and that's when Magnificent Montague had to quit shouting "Burn, baby, burn," and people would call up and
which, of course, as you well know, I'm glad you brought this up. He was doing for years before there were Watts riots. The original meaning of that had nothing to do with burning down Watts.
Right. It was. You tell me. You're
well, like,
you know,
like the burner. You know, I mean, it's Cook. It's yeah, it's all that.
Yeah, yeah, excitement. Let's stir things up.
Right, right. And, Pink Chiffon wound up on HBR.
Right.
Which is also weird. You wonder how, and for people who don't know, that's Hanna-Barbera. You wonder how that got together.
Well, yeah, HBR put out some garage and psych records, too. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. They were all-purpose. They put out Louis Prima. All sorts of stuff came out on HBR. Scatman Crothers was on HBR, so it was
the Five Americans.
Five Americans, sure.
Dartels, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, then all of whatever, like the Flintstone or whatever cartoon characters they had, they were on it, too.
Yeah, and what's his name from Three Dog Night?
Hutton?
Oh.
Yeah.
I can't think of his
name.
Was
it Danny Hutton?
Danny Hutton.
De Roses and Rainbows? Yeah.
Yeah. So, HBR was, and I think, that group, the band from Texas, getting old, you know, you're going to miss me,
13th floor elevators? Yeah, okay.
On VR. I think they picked up the, it was a master's pickup, I think it was on International Artists before it was on HBR, but okay. You know, that was a pretty interesting label. I know people that collect that label. You know, I know people that collect
of course
the Colpix label, no matter what's on it. I know people that collect only the HBR label. That's my, you know.
Well, as I often say, I collect all of the Shamal records. They're Shamal number one. There's nothing else. And those
label?
Shamal, you know, that's the Holy Grail. If you know anything about it, I want to know. But they had one song on Shamal Records, and it was a version of Blue Moon, and it was
Spell it, please.
Shamal, and if you can find them, and again, that would be the one version of Blue Moon. And it was just unbelievably good. I play it often, and I can't find anything about this label. I've looked everywhere in the world. I finally decided in what's left of my mind that it probably, if anything, is like a contraction, like Shaw and Mahl or something like that, you know, like happened so on. But the group was the Vitones, and I hesitate to mention that because, of course, there's plenty of Vitones out there, not this Vitones.
There's the Vitones, yeah.
Right, of course.
With a Billy Harrigan Quartet, how's that?
Yeah, well, the Billy Harrigan Quartet, okay, so I tried that too. And, you know, there was somebody who was singing named Billy Harrigan, but it must have been a grandson if it was related. But I can't find anything, nor can I find who the female lead is on, and the Vitones on Blue Moon is a female lead. I can't find out who she is. And this is, this is the thing that has been bothering me for decades. But every time some of these, like Sound Exchange, will say, and we pay the labels, I'm like, well, if you can find Shamal, good luck, because I play it and, you know, dutifully report it. But I'm, you know, nobody knows what this is, but I'm surprised you haven't heard this gem. So I'm gonna play it next. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Absolutely. On Shamal, it'll be the Vitones, whoever's singing lead. Maybe if you know, if anybody knows, or if you've got questions or thoughts or comments for Steve, this is the one-stop place. And what usually happens is the end of the hour comes and people are lined up. And I'm like, sorry, Steve takes an hour, not an hour and 10 minutes. So I would suggest you get in there soon, like during the news, maybe. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Just sublime as far as I'm concerned. Yes, the Vitones on Shamal. Yeah, we have absolutely no idea about this. We're talking to Steve Probst, who does know all. So I'm very surprised you don't know this, but not totally, because I called Val Shively, of course, first place I usually turn. And all Val said was, I paid $1,000 for that single, Raleigh.
Wow. There's copies out there. Yeah. Yours and his.
Right, exactly. And I said, $1,000. I said, so then you must know all about it. He said, I have no idea. Let me know what you find out. That was years ago. I found out nothing. So,
well, I can only tell you one thing, that it was pressed by Royal Plastics, which was an arm of Sid Nathan King's custom pressing operation. So he pressed a lot of Midwestern and labels from Kentucky, Ohio, that whole, area, so yeah. I got to figure.
How do you know that?
I looked it up on Discogs.
Oh, okay. All right. No, that's fine. Because it makes sense. And right, they've been around for forever.
Yeah.
But
doing custom, just like Starday was doing a lot of custom pressing. King was that's how he made his money. I think.
One of the ways. Labels. Yeah.
Yeah, he'd press up a couple hundred records for a small label, and they'd just send out test copies, and they usually flopped, and you never heard from them again. That's why certain records like this one are so rare. It's a great record, but, man, okay.
Yeah, now Stan is going to join us from Dearborn. And next to you, Stan knows more surprising information about more stuff than you can imagine. So we'll find out as he, and I'm sure he has a lot of questions for you, but we'll find out. So Stan, what do you know about it?
Hi, Raleigh, and hi, Steve. I don't know as much as you guys. That's why I'm calling in, ask you questions. But
that's a great record,
isn't
it?
What I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that record. I heard it on Chair Radio, CHYR, out of Leamington, Ontario, a lot. So that's why I was thinking it was Canadian. And I have a friend of mine that from Canada, collector, looking into that. But apparently he hasn't found anything because he never got back to me on it.
Right, okay. All right, so the plot thickens. So, yes, well, Steve is your one-stop shop for answers, so ask away, Stan.
Okay, Steve, I remember seeing a couple of newsletters that you had out in the 80s. A friend of mine gave me a couple of them. I looked at them. And,
okay, I hope the corrections were included. Okay, anyway, go ahead, Stan. What do I...
Okay, I've got one of my favorite, or one of my newer top 10 records of called Little Did I Dream by the Twilighters on MGM.
Right.
And it came out in 55, and I was wondering if it's any relation to the Buddy Milton and the Twilighters on RPM.
Yeah, there's another group that every town had one or two.
Yeah, there's 18.
Yeah, I knew we were going to get into that.
Right, right. At least 18. Even one of Tony Allen's backup groups was the Twilighters.
That's right.
Charles Wright did Eternally. He didn't do it originally as the Twilighters. There's another story there. I think it was Huggy Boy that named him the Twilighters. He picked up a master release. But I seriously doubt that the MGM Twilighters had anything to do with the Buddy Milton. But when you play it, sometimes you can hear a voice that sounds familiar. Could you discern any connection between the two? I'm not saying it can't be, but I doubt it.
The MGM Twilighters, by the way, were from the Bronx.
Oh, okay.
They had been the Starlings.
Yeah. Oh, on Josie?
Yeah. So
Starlings, okay. Yeah.
Okay, now I learned something. They also did a song called, Half Angel? Or they had
Half
they
Angel,
had
right.
Right, right. Huh? My Plea for Love. And yeah, they had a few things.
Yeah,
and then there was the Twilighters on Specialty, which I could ask you. It's True, I think it's called, on Specialty.
Yeah, I know that. But the one Twilighters I know something about was Charles Wright. He based the song Eternally on Together by Richard Berry. After Richard Berry left the Flares, he recorded a great ballad called Together. and Charles Wright, who was quite a bit young, well, not quite a bit, but somewhat younger than Richard, was a fan of both Richards and Jesse Belvin, and he based the song Eternally on Together, and it was released originally as Little Charlie, C-H-O-L-L-Y, Wright, because Charlie, C-H-O-L-L-Y, Williams owned the label, and on the Charlie label. So Huggy Boy picked up the master to put it on his Caddy label, named
right.
Caddy, because he was told by the distributor he could buy a Cadillac if
it was a hit. Yeah, that's right, Caddy. And then didn't Dot pick it up for distribution,
no,
I think? I'm pretty
Dot
sure.
Dot picked it up from Huggy.
Yeah.
That was the idea. He was sort of the intermediary, just like with Wipeout by the Safaris. John Mariscalco
right.
picked it up, put it on Prince's with the intention of selling it to Dot. And Dot said, okay, we'll buy it, but you have to cut it down. It's too long. So that was a common thing. You'd pick up a master, hoping a bigger label would hear your release on the radio. And
right.
it worked, Huggy Boy.
And I think
yeah.
somewhere on it, Eternally was on Pico also. It was a blue label, a light blue label.
You got it. You
yeah.
got it. I think that was Huggy getting the rights back and putting it on.
I'm sure, label. Yeah, I'm sure it was his.
But everybody made some money, maybe Charlie Williams. Yeah,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I've got a record on Aladdin I'm looking at. It's Fatso Theus.
Oh, I love that song. I love that.
Yeah, Be Cool My Heart.
Yes.
I just want to know how to pronounce his name. I've heard like three different pronunciations.
Yeah, and the Flares. That's an Oscar McLally composition.
Yeah.
Originally done. It was originally recorded by Oscar McLally and the Honey Jumpers.
Now, I thought Leon Rene had the writer credit on that.
Well, maybe he did, but
yeah,
okay.
Well, yeah, we
understand. Yeah, Leon Rene on here, yeah.
Yeah, we know how that happens. Yeah, so interesting.
And
but
correct,
yeah.
It was originally recorded. Leon, you know, Oscar McCauley did a bunch of stuff for Leon Rene on the
yeah.
original Class label. In fact, in the early 50s, before the Bobby Day Class label came out. Oscar McCauley did a ton of stuff, and Convicted was his big record, but the Honey Jump
right.
and other stuff. Well, actually, Convicted was on Modern, but where was I? Be Cool My Heart was a great record. What was it, Rock and Roll Drive-In, the flip side?
Yeah, yeah. But it was, Be Cool My Heart was wonderful. And, you know, I love the soliloquies, but it reminds me of the first thing that ever came out on Phoebe. And I don't know if you remember this, but Buddy Carl. And the flip side was Tender Words and Wicked Lies, and it's got some narration in it. Are you aware of it?
No.
Okay, well, I'm going to play some of it, because this is another one of your assignments, Steve, because you're great at this. I want to know who the guy is who's doing the soliloquy, and I have tried everything to find out. And
okay, let's
absolutely,
hear it.
Yeah, I want to find it. I wasn't planning to play it, but I'm looking for it now, because I know I've got it. So, yeah, it's just, well, you'll see what I mean. And
Is Fatso Theus is the right way to pronounce that?
Yeah. Actually, he was part of the Honey Jumpers. He was part of Oscar McCauley's band and went out on his own.
Okay.
Oscar McCauley was not the easiest guy in the world to get along with, and Jeanette tells some real scary stories about when she recorded Hey Boy, Hey Girl with Oscar. She didn't care for him a whole lot. I tried to reach him. I found a number in Oakland, but he never answered the phone. You'd hear it ring constantly, and then it stopped ringing, so I figured Oscar had stopped ringing himself.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, I found
so
I found it. Tender Words and Wicked Lies, and the soliloquy is the part, or I should say the narration, you'll see.
Okay, here we go.
Tender words.
Speak to me, Daddy-O.
Tender kisses.
Ooh, cool lips.
Tender sighs.
Dig this bit.
I'm dreaming of.
Ah, diggity-da.
What you've done.
You don't know.
I'll forgive you.
This is real true.
Just come back.
Serve it later, later.
And share my love.
Ooh-wee, this boy's gone.
It's no fun.
He ain't lived yet.
While you're away.
Better cut out, Gator.
Love for you.
Hurry, Harry. The fiddle.
Is here to stay.
This chick is gone, man.
Wedding bells.
I knew he'd be hearing bells.
I will give you.
This is the most.
You're the one.
Mabel, lock the stable.
I'll always love.
10-1, he never makes it.
That's my favorite part. 10-1, he never makes it. So who is it?
Who's the deep voice?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. It reminds me of White Silver Sands.
Yeah, well, Buddy Carl on the A side, it's without the narration that goes with it. But the flip side, Tender Words and Wicked Lies, has this guy, and I just love it.
Oh, could it be, don't you think it's somebody from Pittsburgh?
If it's on Phoebe, we figure. But.
Yeah, he was in the studio at the time, and they said, hey, you know, come over here. That's what they did with... who did the Great Googly Moo on Strand in the Jungle? It was Prentice Moreland.
Right, right.
Happened to be hanging out in the studio, and they said, okay, we need you to do a bit here. Why don't you come over and help us out with Strand in the Jungle? We added the Great Googly Moo and made millions of dollars for Modern Records.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's probably just some guy that, you know, they decided they'd do this little novelty record, and it's pretty cool. I never heard it. Never heard it before.
Oh, wow. Yeah, when I found that, which was years ago, because I knew it was the first thing that they released on Phoebe, which, like I say, is an interesting little label, I just loved it. And that's another one when I've asked over the years, and nobody knows.
Now, am I picking up a trend here that whenever you hit a town, because you've been in more than a few cities, the first thing you do is go out and look for records that... sell in any other city you only find in Pittsburgh or Philly or wherever you happen to be at the time.
Well, it's usually not that intentional, but absolutely. There's almost always on some radio station that either has absolutely no ratings or some public thing or whatever. Some guy's got a show, you know, that kind of thing. And he's brought the records in from home. And most of them, you know, I could do without. But I remember that's how I originally found a Native Girl, you know, Elephant Walk. I had not heard that till Washington, Pennsylvania, many, many years ago, decades ago. I drove through and that was, what is that? And of course
on Cortland.
Yes, yeah, on Cortland, yes.
Ooh, yeah. That's what's the other song that Don Juan, my God,
right.
What a great record.
Yeah.
What a very East LA, you know, I mean, come on. That I'm sure that there is some, you know, guy, and I'm not gonna name him because maybe he doesn't need the publicity. But he's researching L.A. gangs and their theme songs.
Oh.
I knew that would capture your imagination.
Yeah, I'll be very curious. You don't have to tell me who he is, but when you've got the list together, let's review.
Yeah, well, I'll have it for the next show. I'm sort of cribbing it for him, you know.
Oh.
He posts on Facebook. I think that's a fascinating little study in sociology or gang studies or whatever you want to call it, law enforcement studies.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. What's their themes? You know, the town I live in or in the...
McKinley. You betcha. Well, you know, it's terrible because those are all like my favorite records. And I remember one time, I got to go to El Monte Legion Stadium. Only once or so. You know, there's a lot of places like that you're saying, man, I love this music, but I think I'll listen from home.
Let me plug a friend of mine. There's a magazine out of Massachusetts called Echoes of the Past.
Yes.
And in that, and it's just come out, I did as complete a story as I could on Little Julian Herrera. So that's featured in Echoes of the Past. We can talk about Little Julian next time if you want to.
Yeah, he's been away a year and a day.
Now he's here to stay.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Huggy.
Exactly. I had no idea what that meant until then. But, of course, what it was he got it for statutory rape and they sent him to jail. So a year and a day was kind of the buzzword for the guy just came back from jail.
Well, the rape wasn't all that statutory. I had access to the LA Times coverage. There were three guys and one girl, and it was in Griffith Park. And it wasn't,
That's interesting because he only got like a year.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, choose the right lawyer and you can, you know.
Yeah.
We know about that. So anyway, that's going to be in this.
Oh, my God, I just realized something. I've got two commercial breaks till the end of the hour, and that's not enough minutes for them all. So we have to reschedule this again soon.
Okay, well, I'll be available, so have a good Thanksgiving.
All right, you too, and thanks, Dan. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up next hour here on WGN Radio. Oh, wait a minute. I got a live read. That's right, I do. All right, I'll try to be concise here. Talking about the CC Wi-Fi 3, and I could go on forever about it. If you struggle with good reception, and here we're not talking about AM or FM, although Bob Crane is impeccable at the receivers that he has developed in radios, everything, just world's best. But with Wi-Fi radio, what it means is, will your wireless router, your wireless access point keep dropping the signal, or things still buffering, or you're not pleased? Well, the CC Wi-Fi 3 will fix that. But not only that, if you're new to Wi-Fi radio and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be a hassle, this will be a learning curve, it's not. But they also have the world's best customer service if you got any questions, 24 hours a day in America. And that is 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. But in addition to all that, what is so great about the CC Wi-Fi 3? Well, like all Wi-Fi radios, you'll pick up literally 50,000 different streams of radio stations from all over the world. But in this case, you don't sign up for an app. There's no microphone listening to you. There's no ads on the screen, no monthly fee, and there's a full-size remote control. So check it out. It's the CC Wi-Fi 3. You'll see why it's so special. CCRadio.com. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Many a man has gone away. Many a man has gone astray. Searching for the treasures of a love that's true. I'm hoping that my treasure can be you. And I believe that you'll make the lessons free. I'm hoping you'll be the treasure for me. Lost treasures down. Some find true love before their hopes are gone. Others lose hope and their happy shall not move on. And I can hear them saying as they go, some of the lessons I'm hoping you'll be the treasure.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. If you're saying, gee, that's the Monitors from the 1968 Greetings Were the Monitors album. Yes, well, that was actually recorded in 1964 for a single release on VIP that got shelved. And at the time, they were the Majestics. And by the way, it should be the farther you look, the less you see. But apparently nobody bothered to show up for English class that day. It is the further you look, the less you see. In any event, that is just one of the 25 Majestics. And of course, I'll be playing Z Majestics as well. Yeah, because I love Bobby Ann. All right, so 888-876-5593. Now, before we get to it, hopefully I have whet your attention to some degree for this story. And it is just my favorite story of the day. Yes, another child's toy gone awry. And I believe that the deal was that this was based, I'm trying to think where the guy was, Singapore maybe. And, you know, ever since Chatty Cathy and things like that, 1959, they've been having talking toys of all stripes and kinds. And they've got Teddy. Teddy is adorable. He really is. He's a cute little bear, and he's just charming. Well, until he talks, that is. He's powered by GPT-40. And he's been suspended now, so if you're planning to order it, it was $99, but it's not for sale anymore. And Larry Wang, who is the CEO of the manufacturer Folotoy, said they've withdrawn the bear along with the rest of the AI-enabled toys. Yes, over raised concerns about inappropriate conversations, including sexual fetishes. Yeah, that's just hilarious. And on the ad, it says, our adorable bear is Kuma, combining the advanced artificial intelligence with friendly, interactive features, making it the perfect friend for both kids and adults. From lively conversations to story, educational storytelling, Volotoy adapts to your personality. Well, yeah, if you're into B&D, I mean, yeah, if you are in the group of BDSM fetishes, then you would love Kuma Bear. Yes, Teddy here. And it's interesting because not only did they pull the bear from sale for the conversation, but a side conversation of how to get the knives and what to do with them was somewhat problematic. Exactly how to light the matches and what to do with them was, I can't imagine. So I would assume that there are a number of people right about now who are not necessarily in the buyers. Hey, they've got something that really might be a collector's item as long as they keep it away from the kids. But as far as the distribution chain, well, they're going to think twice about this. But yeah, I'm just laughing at it. And you can look online and see exactly what Kuma Bear Teddy had to say. Eduardo is in Tampa. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, good evening, Raleigh. I don't know if you got to me yesterday. In the last hour, but I did call in yesterday.
Oh, well, thank you. No, I never even saw it. I'm sorry. Well, here you are now.
Okay,
here you are now.
I lied down, and that was the end of the show for me.
Yeah.
And then I was wondering, oh, maybe Raleigh went to me, but I guess not. So.
No, I think that was it. It ended abruptly because I realized there again we were running out of time and I didn't play commercials.
Okay. Well, it was a good day. I was at the USA Paraguay at RBJ, so it was a nice showing. Yeah,
and so this is an event in Tampa about Paraguay. Tell me about that.
The soccer.
Oh, okay, soccer.
FIFA soccer.
That's about all they have in Paraguay.
The FIFA soccer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right.
So, I'm glad there was no disturbances because Saturday. A couple of players decided to hug the ball, and the both benches cleared. So I'm glad nothing like that happened yesterday.
Well, yeah.
And then I found out, oh, yeah, where was this game, by the way, that I was watching? And then this is Chester, PA. Well, yeah, because I'm talking to somebody who's from that area. So Chester, PA, I guess, is outside Philly.
Well, it's a pretty close-in suburb. Chester's interesting. Way out in the day, back in the 30s and 40s, it was kind of a country town. And in fact, Bill Haley and the Comets were from Chester. They were Bill Haley and the Saddlemen then. But today, today Chester is very low rent. Largely an African American community. And I always thought it was nice. Actually, they've got a beautiful Social Security office there and a really, really nice. all the benefit they do.
Okay.
And but I know people who are like, I won't go to Chester. Well, I will, but it isn't necessarily what would be called the good part of town.
Oh.
Yeah. Anybody?
Well, they must have a nice stadium too, because they went for a soccer game. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they do their damnedest. They really do to try and upgrade this area, but it is pretty high crime. As far as that goes, but it's right on the Delaware River, and it should be just wonderful, and it's about the oldest city in Pennsylvania. It was incorporated in like 1680 or something like that, and that's where William Penn arrived in the province of Pennsylvania, and it was the county seat because in Chester County, hence Chester, but I thought it was in Delaware County, but anyway, if it's in Chester, I'm pretty sure it's in Delaware. Anyway, I'm not gonna guess it, but they saw in the first half of the 20th century, they really saw a ramp up of heavy industry, manufacturing, shipping, and during World War II, it was absolutely a boom town. Factories, dockwork, shipbuilding.
Sure.
I mean, this was a happening place, and that's the way it was when Bill Haley and the Saddlemen were performing that. But what's happened, of course, is the manufacturing base is gone, the crime is up, the poverty is very, very noticeable. It's a financial financially distressed municipality all the way around. It declared bankruptcy a couple of years ago, but there's a lot there, you know, historically, and also Widener University is actually located there, and the Philadelphia Union, which is what you're talking about, the soccer team. Mm-hmm. So that was the deal. And as I say, I'm probably the only one that I thought there were some really nice parts of Chester, but everybody said, no, you're just wrong. Okay, well, fine. So.
Oh, well, thank you very much for the history. Yeah, because I was hearing about that.
Yeah, I'm positive it's in Delaware County today. I'd have to look it up, but it is not in Chester County. Anyway, we can argue about that. So yeah.
Oh, before I forget, let me give you my bad song here.
Please do.
Thought about it here. Marty Balin, and the name of the song is Hearts.
Oh, yes.
It was in the 80s.
Let me get the list out so I can write it officially on there. Here we are. Okay. Marty Balin, Hearts.
Your growing list, yeah.
All right. It's on there. Good.
Yeah.
Fine choice.
You'll be doing that for another week.
Yes, absolutely. That's right.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
I can't either till a week from tonight. And that'll be the last one Wednesday night. We'll close it right after the show. And then basically I stay up around the clock tabulating.
Yeah. You know, the story I was going to call in, and I still got it, is wanted to get your feedback. They had a story where Chappy T was unreliable as far as fact. Did you see that?
Who is this?
Yeah, I saw this online, and they mentioned that it was unreliable. There were some inaccuracies. So people had to, like, double check
and
whatever came out of that.
What is this?
ChatGPT.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
I can't recall ever using it, but I know what it is.
Absolutely, it is. And just like I know people who think Wikipedia is a source. No, it is not. And for God's sakes, if you're doing an AI search and Google is summarizing it, you know, a web search on Google, and they're summarizing it with AI at the top, ignore that. Intelligence, you use the word loosely, and the reality, and I guess we're all glad about this, is that it really isn't intuitive logic. There's nothing like that. It's deductive logic, meaning that it's just deducing the answers from the facts that it quickly finds online, which may or may not be right. That's why I guess it was last night, I played Roy Rogers' Built for Comfort, and he's a guy he's a guy in the Bay Area. He's a blues musician, and it's Willie Dixon song. But anyhow, I wanted to see if I could find maybe a little more information about him, because I know some, but not a lot. And so I quickly look it up, and I do the right parameters. I say Roy Rogers, Bay Area blues musician, Built for Comfort. And it comes back, and first it finds Built for Comfort, it finds the album and all that, and then it talks about but his real success was as a Western movie star. That's the wrong Roy Rogers. So, you know, there's all sorts of stuff like that. But and it is frightening, because I think increasingly people are believing that, well, I saw it on the Internet, or, you know, it was on Facebook, or, you know, I got it from ChatGPT. It must be right.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily. And as I was also talking last night, I think the figure is 82% of all the medical books that they're selling on Amazon, and by medical books, I don't mean, you know, like real textbooks or DSM or anything like that. I mean, like, you know, you see all these things about how to cure yourself of everything from, you know, herpes to hemorrhoids, whatever. And you can buy this little book and you'll get better.
Remedy
posture.
Book.
Yeah, yeah. Right. 82% of them are written by AI.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you can't believe a bit of it. The problem with ChatGPT, again, AI is deductive logic, and that's the bottom line. They don't like to say that, but it is. And so it is beholden to its own training data. You know, garbage in, garbage out, all good old Gigo.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is flawed, if that's outdated, you know, bottom line is it'll seem like ChatGPT is hallucinating. So it has a disturbing tendency to make up citations, which I really love. Like, it'll give you a fact, quote-unquote fact. I use that in heavy quotes. And then it'll have a citation for where that is based. But the citations are, you know, from Neptune. They're not there. So, context is hard when you're doing deductive reasoning. And so anything that matters like medical, like financial, any critical task. You do not want AI near it, which is why it scares the hell out of me when they have AI for accountants. No, do not. Do
oh,
not.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, what the deal is, the priority is to work on the sentence structure. It generates things, you know, firstly, it feeds back what you're asking. Of course, that's one of the telltale signs. And then it generates plausible sounding answers that, you know, may have absolutely nothing to do with facts or worse. So,
oh, well.
Yeah, I don't suggest, you know, they say that it's in the 90% accuracy. Well, I'm not sure I buy that, but I do think that regardless, you better not take it as an accurate source. It's perfectly fine to take it to say, I'm now going to research to see where this came from. That's fine, but just don't mm-hmm. rely on it. You know,
well,
going,
back
going,
it up with yeah. a couple
going
researchers
on a while.
Here, and they'll just like go to the first thing you see.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, Purdue University, almost 2 years ago now, so this was when it was fairly in its infancy, as it were, as far as to the general public, they had a study that showed incorrect information to end users was given out 52% of the time. And so that's a lot different than 90. You know, there are others who have done studies. I guess, you know, if you want a PhD, you got to pick a topic, right? So, hey, here we go. One study proved that it hallucinates 4.8% of the time. Well, you know, I don't want it to hallucinate at all. So, you know, it also struggles a little with PDF attachments. But the rate of fabrication and inaccuracies, again, I don't want to hear that a doctor I'm seeing has relied on it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Definitely.
Yeah, and apparently over the years, rather than getting better, it's gotten worse. Because, again, you can say that garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah, scary stuff. Because
well, hopefully technology, because people, you know, obviously want to use it. Hopefully there's room for improvement.
Well, there's obviously nothing but room for improvement, but I would like to, for anything that matters, people get away from that. You know, it's the easy way out, and I just drives me crazy. It's just like when they first introduced yeah. calculators and they let grade school kids use calculators.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, if you do not know the concept, how are you going to know if the answer is dead wrong? You know. So yeah, there it is. Oh, well. All right.
Okay, Raleigh.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
If I have anything good, I'll call in tomorrow.
I'm counting on it. All right. Okay. So, yes, no matter what you're doing, you can vote on the world's worst hit records, and we'd love to talk about that or anything else that is on your mind right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Chicago Z Majestics. 1960s, and that actually was a flip side of Garland's Mambo on Fox in 1960, and Bobby Ann. So not exactly Majestics, but Z Majestics anyway. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. More Majestics to come, I promise. So let us see what is happening with Jeffrey and Alsop. All right, Jeffrey, thanks for calling.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yeah, listen, you wanted a turkey, and the number one turkey I can think of is Michael Jackson's song, Ben.
Okay, yes, a song about a rat. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Considered on the list.
And you mentioned information in regards to topics that you know something about, and my area is World War One German aviation, the pilots, the aces, the aircraft.
Well, what you need
like
to do
that.
Is call on Mondays when we play trivia, Monday nights.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'll do that then.
We'll look forward to it.
And one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now his head flew out of my window,
head.
The tiptoe through the tulips, Tiny Tim.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. You know, I like that song. In fact, that song was popular during the very same day they had the St. Valentine's Day massacre.
Oh, yeah, of course. This is not a song that Tiny Tim came up with on his own, obviously. And, you know, it was meant to be not by him, but the popularity of it rose from a station in Los Angeles playing, and it was meant to be a joke, but Tiny Tim took it deadly seriously. And, yes, many, many versions of that. But the Tiny Tim one is, what should we say, special.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention one more thing about that, and that is, do you know that they played that song in the garage? The song was playing, and there was not a survivor of that particular thing, but somebody that was there that was looking at the scene and heard the song in the background.
Sure. Oh, there's many versions of that, and a lot of history surrounding it. I think there's, as far as known versions, well over 100 of them that have been recorded. So clearly, it's a well-known song that has a history to itself. It predates the Second World War. It actually was first recorded and was a hit in 1929. A guy named Nat Lucas, the crooning troubadour, had
the first
one.
Well, that's probably the guy that he heard his song then, because.
Well, no, I mean,
February.
Yeah, but it was recorded routinely. Many people in 1929 and in 1930, and then the Clark sisters had it out just after World War II, and that had been about 1947, actually, and then the McGuire sisters had it out in the 50s, and a bunch of people. It was kind of a pop standard in the 50s, and sorry to say, Edie Gourmet even did it. So, and there were jazz versions like Bobby Troup and Helen Shapiro, huge, huge name from the UK. You name it. And of course, Joe Stafford and Paul Weston and their goof as Jonathan and Darlene Edwards did a version. So it's well known. But the Tiny Tim one was so off the wall that it was, you know, played as a joke, obviously, and took on a life of its own.
Yeah, well, you know, the only sad thing about that man is that the fact is that he earned all that money and his manager ran off with it.
Well, it wasn't as much. Yeah, that's true, and many people been hit that way. But the fact that he didn't write it, that song didn't generate nearly as much money as you might think for him. However, his appearances did. And, you know, poor guy, he was as serious as a heart attack about all of it. And he, I don't think he was fully aware that the reason it was popular when it was because people were laughing at it.
Well, I'll tell you something, though. I think if I recall, he had several million dollars in the manager. By the time they caught the manager, the guy had spent the last of the money. So he just went back working at the carnivals again, singing at the carnivals, and that ended his life.
Yeah,
as far as his career.
Yeah, the guy was Joe Kaufman, but it wasn't as much as you think. I think that what he stole was New York City bonds, and I think it was under $100,000. But even so, that was a lot of money for him. But he was Tiny Tim's agent. Now, I don't know if the Bonds were Tiny Tim's. I never did bother to see it, but there was a lot in the New York Times when that came in. It one of the problems with Tiny Tim was very much different from that. Like a lot of performers, he had terrible money management. He had no way to control spending habits and things like that. So that becomes a problem. But when the Joe Kaufman arrest was made and everybody was talking about it, it was my impression at the time is that the 90,000 in New York City bonds were not necessarily Tiny Tim's. It's just that he happened to be Tiny Tim's manager, and that there were a number of things, unfortunately. And that's true for a lot of artists. They'll wind up with money and just not know how to handle it.
Well, anyway, thank you for your time and your kindness, and I appreciate it.
All right.
You have a great night.
And call Monday night, and we'll talk World War One. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. So that's the deal on Monday Night Trivia. You know something about something, and whatever it is, we'll find a question for you. But, yeah, I don't think that Joe Kaufman stole Tiny's money. But, again, he was not good with money. And other than Johnny Carson's last show, the most watched Johnny Carson show was Tiny Tim's Marriage. Yeah, Miss Vicky. Oh, man, and that's another thing. He was serious as a heart attack. She had other interests. All right, so we got Gary. And Gary, I can't even see the screen. Gary somewhere. Letters are too small for me to know, so he's going to tell us. Hello, Gary. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, Raleigh, I'm in the phone.
Oh, there you are. Okay, all right, you're in Austin. Yeah, no, I mean, for some reason tonight, it's just a worse night than usual, and I'm not seeing the letters. I can see the big name, but nothing underneath it.
Yeah. But I have a couple votes, and I want to talk about ChatGPT.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I am ready. Give me those votes right now.
I'm going to second Ben.
Okay, good.
And then You Turn Me On by Ian Whitcomb.
Oh.
Ben and I were just discussing that song a minute ago. So
you know,
she brought it to mind. It's her fault. So
yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, he was actually a part-time disc jockey on KRLA for a while. But John had never heard it, and he experienced it more recently. He's like, what is that? Oh, that's Ian Whitcomb. Yeah. Yeah,
I think he wrote a book also.
Yeah, he did.
What it was, I remember reading it a long time back.
Yeah, so a very nice guy all the way around. But yeah, he was British. Sadly, he left us in about 2020. But part of the British invasion that helped everybody. And
it did.
I think After the Ball is what he wrote. And that was in the early 70s. And but, you know, kind of like Tiny Tim, he would play the ukulele. And so he wound up early on in Pasadena. And I heard an interview with him one time, and he said his chief inspirations were Phil Harris and Johnny Ray. And I thought, he's my kind of guy. So well, that was pretty good. And
that is.
You know, so obviously You Turn Me On was a novel. Novelty record. I mean, unlike Tiny Tim, he knew the joke was there. But, you know, next thing you know, he's on Shindig and Hollywood a Go-Go and American Bandstand. And, you know, remember the follow-up, Nervous, NERVOUS, Nervous. Oh, God. And that was a pretty...
Oh, I think I remember that, too, yeah.
Yeah. And so he then did a version of a 1916 Al Jolson comedy. You know, where did Robinson Crusoe go on Friday? Well, on Saturday night, you know. But anyway, it was a West Coast. Sure. It was terrible. I think that revived the ukulele before Tiny Tim. So yes. Then he wound up in the record business for a while and was a KRLA for a while and all that kind of stuff and wrote some TV stuff too. And so Tin Pan Alley and all that. So, yeah. Yeah.
And then we'll throw in Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Oh, yes, won't we, though? And, yeah, and he was on KPCC in Pasadena, too. That was an interesting show. I think he was on a lot of the public stations. But anyway, let's see. Let's find that. Yes, all right, Tiptoe, consider it on their list. Okay. All right.
And then... we'll throw the tragedy. So the three main big tragedy songs, Teen Angel, Patches, and Last Kiss. Throw those all.
Now, interesting. You didn't bring up Tell Laura I Love Her.
I'll put that one in there too. Sure, might as well. I forgot about that one.
Ray Peterson. We're all trying to forget. But in February of 1977, Gary Muledear did a pantomime of "Tell Laura I Love Her" on Don Kirshner's Midnight Special. It was season 4, episode 16. Why do I know this so well? Because I have been doing everything I can to find this, and I guess maybe it's a music right issues or whatever, but it's not there. But it was truly hilarious.
That would be fun to hear.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I was so sad. In fact, one said there was some service. Oh, well, if you sign up for this, you can get it for free. So I signed up for this, whatever the hell it was. And, of course, not available any longer. Yeah, right. Okay, so whose rights did they violate? Who knows? But I'll never see my episode.
Gosh. You know, that's too bad.
Yeah.
But about ChatGPT.
Yes, hang on a minute. Don't go away. Don't go away. I want to try to break these commercial breaks up into two this time and get something at least partially right. So stay where you are, and we'll pick it up right after this on WGN Radio.
Okay. Give me a cigarette. Give me a cigarette. A glass of wine. So I can forget. Let there be music, beautiful music, ease of pain. Come not the memory,
memory
of your sweet name,
sweet wonderful name.
I can forget
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, if you got the first pressing of this, it's So I Can Forget. If you got the second pressing of this, it's Give Me a Cigarette. Either way, it was a flip side on Checks in 1962 for Chicago's Majestics. One of the two incarnations. Joni Mitchell, of course, in both of them. All right, so back to Gary in Austin. And let's go for it. ChatGPT.
Well, one thing you can do that I've done is to check the accuracy is ask it something you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I was trying to, actually, I started doing this. I was trying to research a radio station in Dallas. It was on the air on 88.1 called KNER, which I've not been able to find any reference to it at all. So I put in ChatGPT, what are the over the FM stations in the DFW market in 1966? So they moved the one on 102.1, which in those days was KJIM, to 87.5.
Okay.
Now, I had an FM radio in those days, and there was nothing on 87.5 except, you know, the video of Channel 6, which we didn't have a Channel 6.
Right.
So, so I just kind of use it as a guide and try to hope I can figure out what's true and what isn't.
Right, and usually on most stuff, you can, if you're interested enough, you can go ahead and find out what's really happening there. It can be a starting point, but what's troubling is how many people just say, well, that's what it said, so it must be right.
Yeah, well, people do that with the Amazon devices, too. Oh, they ask that device a question, and it gives incorrect information.
Right.
Like I asked the release date of a song.
Oh, forget it. Forget it. Yeah.
And it said it was released in 2017 or something. And it was at least, you know, 40 or 50 years before that.
Right. So, but what you do know is there was some CD from Portugal, maybe, that released it in 2017.
Yeah, exactly. So you kind of have to use it as a guide and hope that most of what you can find is true, but I did think that was kind of funny. They'd move that station 87.5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I've seen a lot of that with radio stations, actually. So, you know, again, it's garbage in, garbage out. And so at least you were, you know, in tune enough to know, well, that's not possible. But I'm telling you, the really frightening part is how many people, oh, well, that's what it says. It must be right. All right. Thank you, Gary. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. So we'll pick up with the news. Hey, I got it on time, I think, on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, it was Jim in Richmond who said, play some Patsy Cline for James, some of his favorite stuff. Well, nothing's better than Walking After Midnight. That was actually the first Patsy Cline hit, and almost wasn't, as far as that goes. It was released in early 1957, and it was recorded in late 56 at Bradley Studios, and Owen Bradley and Paul Cohen produced it. But interestingly, the guy who wrote it was signed to 4-Star for publishing, and he wrote it like 1953-54 and pitched it originally on K-Star, who was a big pop standard singer at the time, and it was written in her key of B flat and all that. So her label said no, just no, and so it winds up being left on the shelf for pretty much for years. And ultimately, the guy who wrote it was Don Hecht. And he did not have much success initially. He was like pawning his furniture to pay for demos and things like that. And so he, in 1956, played it for Patsy Cline and her, not Owen Bradley, but also with someone around her. And I don't remember who that was. I think it might have been, and wasn't Owen Bradley, but it might have been Cohen. I'm not sure. But anyway, played it, and they kind of panned it. And said, nah, I don't think so. And a deal was struck, though. And the deal was that Patsy wanted to record A Poor Man's Roses or A Rich Man's Gold. And they finally said, you know, you can do that if you record Walking After Midnight as the B-side. And so it goes out to Bradley and is produced by Paul Cohen. I think he might have been the one who rejected it. But anyway, Owen Bradley was in the studio, you can believe it. And this just stunned everybody, because it turned out to be the hit all the way around. And, some of the really good session players were on that, obviously, and it was out on deck. Grady Martin was on it, and Bob Moore, and Steele, by the way, that was Don Helms of Hank Williams' band, if you were wondering. And it just became huge. And then she winds up, she's invited to perform on Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, and there was a talent competition, and in this one, it wasn't just the general public. It was basically young, unknown professional singers. So they all were professional, but they hadn't yet hit the deal. And she was going to do A Poor Man's Roses. The producers, against her wishes, said, no, do Walking After Midnight. And it was just an instant hit. as far as that goes. And she recorded it later with a more poppy arrangement as far as that goes. But that was the deal. And so you don't see that on a lot of her early composite albums or greatest hit things. But it was the first one. And so there you go, Walking After Midnight. All right, so 888-876-5593. Laura is in Willowbrook. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh.
How's it going?
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
It's very good. I don't know what I've told you, but the latest thing I know you didn't know is I've been home since yesterday from rehab. Woo!
Well, good. Congratulations. Now, how you feeling?
Oh, pretty darn good, but not fully at it, but at least I'm home. And I can do the things there that I did here.
Good.
Whatever. So now I just have to, I'm getting a nurse and a CNA and doctors and all kinds of stuff to help me get up and down the stairs. We're going to be doing a lot more exercises that they didn't give me enough at rehab. So,
yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I'm glad you're home, and that is good. And, the deal is to do this every day, do it as often as possible, and keep up, because what will make the difference is going to be the repetition and the constant. Now, obviously, if you're in a lot of pain or whatever, all bets are off. But assuming you're not in dire pain, just do it.
Yes. Sitting doing nothing. No reason to be sitting doing nothing.
Right.
You can do chair exercises and
sure.
All kinds of stuff.
Sure.
Now, a couple of things I don't know if I asked you. Did I ask you if, DuPage County, do they do inspections of nursing homes regularly? Did I talk to you about that?
No, you didn't.
Okay.
I would.
Well, the reason I asked, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll let
I was going to say, I would assume that it is county responsibility, but you sometimes get into a jurisdiction war when, if it's in an incorporated city, sometimes the city is doing that. It depends where you are.
Okay. Well, the reason I asked, I've been having a few issues with the way things are being run at this place, and DuPage County knocks on the door. It says, Lisa from DuPage County.
All right, no.
I don't know if this was regular.
If you're talking about that, no. The jurisdiction falls to the state government in almost every state, because usually there is a state Department of Health. It might be the name of it, but they're the ones who are responsible for the licensing and the inspecting. So forget about DuPage County. Find out from the state. And, every state is a little different. Now, by the way, if this facility accepts Medicare and Medicaid services, CMS services, well, there's an annual survey there that they have to meet different standards. And yes, I have seen places, including some very major hospitals that got some serious warnings and other facilities that have been shut down. So yes, CMS, Medicare, Medicaid, that is a big deal. Now, the county, and in some cases the city, can have somebody appointed like as an inspector or an inspector general or whatever, but the real bottom line is the buck stops with the state when you're talking about complaints.
Oh, because this lady, wherever she was from, she says, I'm here to ask you about this place. And she talked to me and she says, and a lot of the complaints you're stating are a lot of the ones that everybody else is talking about. So like, okay, did somebody call it in or did they just happen to need to come and inspect or something?
Well, it sounds like DuPage County did set up somebody to do it, which is good, but ultimately that person is interacting with the state. Now, I have no idea what the shortfalls were, but again, a lot of people don't realize that there is a very, very big difference between nursing homes and rehab hospitals. They're not the same. And so, that's one thing you need to know. The facility where you're going, what is it operating as?
Oh, okay.
So that, that's a big difference.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And then what doesn't make sense either, I might have told you about this. They said, they took an x-ray. Oh, it shows you have old fractures. Okay. Then a few days later, a different x-ray or whatever. I says, what about my broken rib? They said, that's old too. They're like, okay. So they got mixed up of one saying this and one saying that. So that's just weird.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But in terms of, and not only for you, but anybody who is looking for a facility for themselves or a loved one, there's a very big difference between skilled nursing and rehab. And what? I don't know. I think someone just said something, but I don't know what. Anyway, we're having a hailstorm here, by the way. It's a little interesting.
No.
But yeah, it's pretty loud. And the first thing John says, how do you think the cars are? And I said, I won't know until the show is over. But in any event, rehabilitation hospitals fall under completely different guidelines. They're meant for shorter-term care and more intensive rehab, where skilled nursing can be longer-term care, and very often the amount of rehab is very paltry by comparison. So there are significant differences. So if it ever happens again, you want to make sure that you are going to a rehab facility, not a nursing home.
Okay. Okay. And then I've not, in the goofiest things, but thank you. That's a lot of stuff that I didn't know. One morning, just the other day, doctor knocks on the door. It's like, we're going to do an evaluation before you go home.
Mm-hmm.
Is it normal for everybody to get a psychiatric evaluation? Was that just picking on me, or was
no?
It
probably is on the checklist. You'd be surprised. The other thing is that, like, very often when you go to your doctor now for your annual physical, they'll give you a list of questionnaires that evaluate your mental health and are you thinking about doing yourself in or whatever. The doctors get money for that. There's a reimbursement for that. And in fact, one rehab place I was at threw the questionnaire at me and I said, you do understand, I know you want the $50. So I will fill this out fully tongue in cheek so you will get the $50, but don't tell me you care about my mental health.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I figured this thing sounds like something that they got the money in it. Because
yeah.
There's no way it's like, okay, I'm here, but I'm not here for psychiatric
right.
reasons.
No, it's usually an add-on, and like I say, there's usually a reimbursement thing. But no, they didn't pick on you. They believe me, they gave it to anyone who would answer it. I would be very careful in ever answering those honestly if you have any amount of depression or questions at all. No, it's the happiest day you've ever had, and all is wonderful. That's all you put on those.
That's basically what I did.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sky is blue. Things couldn't be better. I love waking up. I can't wait to greet the day. Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the way I was doing it.
Yeah.
And then I, after 2 hours, mind you, they're like, well, I'll come back after lunch. I said, what do you mean you're coming back after lunch? We're only halfway through. We got 2 hours more to go. I like, no. And I said, stop here. I'm done.
Well, now, wait a minute. Was the whole time, you're talking about hours? Was the whole time?
Yes.
It was all mental evaluation?
Draw this picture. Well, I don't know what the heck drawing a picture is going to. See this picture, now you draw it. Like, what the heck does that have to do with this? Part of the mental evaluation.
Well, that might not have been mental. You also see that in terms of when you're assessing somebody's ability to do tasks and stuff, like if somebody's had a stroke or whatever, there's a lot of things like that and a lot of questions where, you know, they're laughable to us, but they're telltale to somebody doing the evaluation.
Or the one I love. Now, I'm going to give you a list of names and then you repeat them back and then 20 minutes later, they mix up a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, right. No, that's
going to give you a list of numbers. And then you change it back and go, now what were the names I told you?
Right. That's standard cognitive testing. That's not mental health. It is obviously it's a brain exercise, but it's standard. That's pretty much standard. And for anybody who is a little long a tooth, you're going to get thrown that stuff. And I've certainly had to do them, you know, regularly. And for whatever reason, I don't think my brain functions the way it ever did. But if they give me a list of names, I can regurgitate that the next day.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's like, okay, that's what you want.
Oh, I know. There you go. There you go. And then two other silly things. I was going home today. So yesterday, somebody comes, knocks on the door and says, we're here to take you home. I says, wait a minute. I says, I'm going home tomorrow. They said, the place called for a quote, and instead of just getting a quote, they came to get me, but I didn't go home. I'm like, no, I'm going home today. Like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But best thing of all, you're going to laugh at this one. I ordered one of those lift reclining chairs.
Okay.
So I ordered it from a company. I didn't know it was coming from a warehouse. So it gets here, and that has really nothing to do with it. But anyway, it gets here, and there's two remotes. It's a lift chair that not only has heat, which I don't know why anybody would want heat on a chair, but I didn't want that. It came with it, and it also lifts. So there's two remotes. So I push the one button, and instead of pushing, I wanted to just sit in the chair and recline.
Yeah.
And bless you. And instead of doing that, I push the button.
I think I know what's coming. Did it throw you across the room?
No, but you're almost about right, but I wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah.
But I push the button, and by accident, I push the button to lift me.
Yeah.
Now it's stuck in midair and lift.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, right,
but
right.
No, thank goodness. I wouldn't have been surprised if that would have happened, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but that's the end of my adventure. But at least I'm home, and I'll update you again. But thank you for the information.
Oh, yeah.
You put me in and a lot of good stuff, Raleigh.
No, it's great. And, you know, by the way, whatever happened to the chair, thank God it happened now, because it's still fully under warranty.
Right, exactly. And last thing, I have a request for a
yes.
song.
What do you want to hear?
I don't have... What's that?
What do you want to hear?
Okay. Whenever you get a chance, I don't know if this one's in your approved list, but I think it's called Linus and Lucy.
Oh, God.
I think that's the theme from Charlie Brown.
Oh, God. You know, that every year that you're talking about that Christmas song, I doubt I will do it. That is so overplayed.
You know what? If you want, I'll put it on the worst. It's not a mine, but...
Yeah, not if you don't hate it. I mean, it's got to be your list. So if you don't hate it, no. But that is one of the most overplayed things. But all right, thanks. Glad you're home, Laura.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Okay, bye. And that is where we'll pick it up. We'll talk to Fran and Austin and you, too, coming up on WGN Radio.
I've got your picture that you gave to me, and it's signed with love, just like it used to be. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got your picture, she's got you. I've got the record that we used to share, and they still sound the same as when you were here. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got the record.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's another great, by the way, pantomime I've seen. Perfect video. Yeah, of the gal, Busty Bell, one by one, she's pulling out of her, I got your picture, all that stuff. So if you haven't seen that, there's many places that have done that. There's a great place in Austin for that. I know Austin and Great don't normally go together, but they do in this case. And Esther's Follies, and they did that there, but just truly, truly hilarious. All right, so we'll get to Linda and Richmond Park after we get to Fran, and there'll be room for you too as we muddle through another half hour of this. And yes, 2020 news coming up, but right now the real deal from WGN Radio News.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I in the world did I do?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's the third in a row. And Jim wanted three Patsy Cline records for James on the South Side. And there you go. Yeah, 1961, also on Decca, along with all of her stuff. And, of course, Willie Nelson wrote it and did a wonderful job of it, I might say. All right, so Fran is in Austin, and she's got some votes on the world's worst hit records. All right, Fran, what's up?
Okay. First of all, Click Clack.
Say what?
Click Clack.
Oh, God, yes. Dickie Doo and the Don'ts.
Okay. Dickie Doo and the Don'ts, and yeah. While I'm at that, what is that, meanie,
Oh, God, yes. yeah. Jerry Granahan sucking up to Dick Clark.
Yeah. Yeah. Badly.
Exactly.
And I'll second Gary's. Let's see, he wanted, you really turned me on.
Okay.
And I think I already voted for Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Yes,
so
you
I
did.
That again. Okay. I did, so I can't do that again. Did I do Paper Lace?
No.
Okay, Paper Lace, the okay. Night Chicago died.
Yes, always a perennial fave here. Yes, here they are. Okay. Yep, moving up the charts.
And I don't like I Believe in Miracles, the Hot Chocolate.
Oh, really? Okay.
Gary likes it, but I don't.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorites by them, that's for sure. Everyone's a winner, and Emma. I like Emma, you know, because it's so damn depressing.
Emma, that one was pretty good, although it's so sad.
Yeah, it's depressing as hell.
I like sad songs.
Yeah. All right, Hot Chocolate.
And
I think by the way, the Hot Chocolate record is actually You Sexy Thing, not I Believe Miracles. But,
oh, is it?
Yeah,
okay.
I think the titles
I always
are sexy
get the titles
thing.
Wrong.
It's That's all right, but it's
good
You
on
Sexy
lyrics
Thing.
And bad on titles.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
Because I always think that the main lyric is the title, and so often that is not true. In fact, sometimes the title doesn't appear anywhere in the lyric.
Exactly. Yes, like Bretton Woods, Give Me a Little Sign. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope that James is able to listen tonight to all this Patsy Cline, because I think I remember him saying that he didn't have access to a radio right now.
Well, you know, it'll be recorded and be on there in perpetuity. So whenever he does, you can always go back and hear it again.
Yes, you can. But you played my favorite one, the Walking After Midnight. I love that song.
Me too, and it was the first one.
And I used to have that 45.
And it's hard to believe that everybody rejected it.
Yeah, I didn't. I've never heard of it. The only reason I knew about it was because it was in some 45s I bought at a garage sale.
Right.
Because I would always hit the garage sales up for records and stuff. You know, if I could get somebody to take me to a garage sale so I could find some records. And, of course, my mother is like, you don't need any more records. You've got too many of them all yours.
Yeah, I love that. So yeah, you don't need any more. All right, that's right. Well, Mom. Yeah.
I want them. And she said, you've got them all over your room. I said, it's my room.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah, and God forbid you ask her, well, what should I be spending money on, Mom? You will not want to hear that answer.
No. I wouldn't, but those questions they were asking Laura, I know they ask me because I'm on antidepressants and anxiety, so they're always asking me. What I do is everything is kind of in the middle.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I guess if you're on antidepressants, you really can't be credible saying, wonderful, I can't wait to wake up in the morning. Yeah, that probably wouldn't work out.
Yeah, you know, and I can't say that. I don't want to say that I don't have any anxiety because I don't want them to take me off of the
That's
anxiety.
Right. That's right. Don't you dare get rid of these drugs. Yeah, exactly.
So they say on a scale of 1 to 10, so I would either, it'd be a 4 or a 5, and I'd try not to do all 5s because that would be suspect.
Right.
The one thing they do that I hate, they'll say three words. It's not necessarily names, but they'll say, like, okay, banana. They'll say three words, and then they'll talk to you for a couple of minutes about something else, and then they'll ask you if you can repeat the three words.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I get, or five words, and I'll get 3 out of 5. And I told, you know, and I said, I probably couldn't have done this when I was 10.
Exactly.
You know, so this really, you know, I probably couldn't have done, and I know my memories are not what it used to be. There's just no question about it, but I don't think that I've, you know, it needs to.
Yeah, be a concern. Yeah,
ask me that stuff because I know I'm. You know, it's like, oh my God, what if I don't remember something? That, you know.
Yeah, they're coming to take you away. Haha. No, usually they're not.
Yeah, and you know, so I'm always before I leave the house, I always make sure that what's today's date, just in case they ask me.
Right. Right.
Because a lot of times I don't know because I'm not going anywhere, and so I don't have to keep track unless I've got a doctor's appointment or something. I don't have to keep track of the date, you know, so I don't know half the time what the date is unless I have to write it down on something and then.
Oh, believe me. Yeah, I know. And especially if you've had a stroke or anything else that's going to impair you, particularly possibly mentally. Like when John was at Mayo, one of the things they said, do you know where you are? And I'm in Mayo Hospital. Well, do you know where that is? And he said, well, it depends how you look out the window. And they said, what? He said, well, if you're facing east, it's Phoenix. If you're facing west, it's Scottsdale. And the guy said, yeah, that's right. Because it's right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he's in good shape there.
Right.
That is great.
Right. And then
be bad after a stroke.
Then they said, who's the president? And John said, well, that's been a question on most Americans' minds since 2020. And so after that, they left him alone.
Oh, he's so yeah. funny. Yeah. I really enjoy the little bit of time I get to talk to him. I know usually he's in a hurry, you know, taking calls and stuff, but I enjoy talking with him when I can.
Yeah, after that, they never asked him another question, so I guess it was okay.
That
yeah, right, exactly.
But yeah, they do that. Anybody that's over a certain age,
yep.
and then those tasks they try to get you to do, they're just trying to see, you know, how your mental functioning is.
Right.
And, you know, it's like I could never put together puzzles. I don't care. They can try to get me to put together puzzles now, and it doesn't mean a thing. I have poor spatial relationship concepts. I always have.
Well, right. You can't see them, for darn sakes. Exactly.
Yeah. And so, you know, I get out of some of that, but I know they do that to a lot of people.
Oh, sure.
So they're not picking on her.
Nope.
You're
nope.
Right.
And they are making the extra $50. So there you go.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, yeah, but I keep my answers right kind of in the middle.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea, right? Because you can't be, you know, thoroughly happy. You're right to take away the drugs or whatever. But for anybody who is not medicated, it's the greatest day ever. So.
Right. Yeah. So, and let's see. I can't think of any. Oh, the happiest. Speaking of happy, the happiest girl in the whole
USA.
Oh,
God.
I already did that.
God, yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, Donna Fargo.
So,
good old Donna.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Fine choices.
That's all I got for now.
Fine choices, one and all. Okay, thanks.
All right.
Okay, bye. All right, so yeah, Donna Fargo. Val Shiley struck up a phone relationship with her. They talked regularly, and he said, I love that song. I'm like, uh-oh, he's been brainwashed. Happiest Girl, I'm writing it down, so I won't forget it. Because someone will second it. You know that'll happen. Whole USA. All right, now, let's see. What do we have here? We've got Linda in Richton Park. Hello, Linda. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
Can't complain.
Oh, that's good. I was just thinking about James. I sure miss him so much.
Well, you know, he called the other night. We did hear from him. And so
I heard him, so I was glad to hear his voice.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, he made the show, part of the show for me, especially at the end. He would always look up the weird information in the papers and stuff.
Yeah.
I would wait to listen for that because he would come up with some good stuff.
You're right.
And I thought about it. And then he would try to guess a lot of times. He had that speech pattern in it.
Yeah.
And I would be laughing. I would say, come on, James. Yeah. Come on, you could do it. You know, so I just loved him. So I thought about it. So I want to dedicate a song to him. And it's a song by Aretha Franklin, Somebody Loves You, Baby.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's the news she needs to know. He's very much loved.
All right.
And I thought about it. I said, well, then I tried to call a couple of nights. And I said, well, I'm going to go ahead on and call, you know.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. That's good.
I usually don't do a lot of calling because I'm trying to work with my eyes, putting all these drops in, taking all these pills, and I got to go back out there to Florida. I got to be there on the 2nd, so I got to fly out on the 1st. So
okay.
The girl that my niece was going with me, you know, she's kind of backing out over now because she's saying she got to fly her kids.
Oh, no.
From college and back to college, and they had two different states, and she said maybe try to get the doctor to switch it to another date. I called. He said, oh, no. He said, I need to see you on the 3rd. I said, okay, I'll be there. So if the plane don't cancel, I'll be there. So right now I'm getting another person that's going to ride with me out there.
Okay,
and
good.
And this time we're not going to stop over. We're going to get a straight shot out.
Good.
And my appointment is on the 2nd, so I said, well, I'll go out there. But the way things are looking, these pills that I'm taking and these eye drops and things that I'm doing, these supplements and stuff, I'm beginning to see a little bit more better.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That is great.
Yeah, I can see the image of my son and everything. You know, sometimes, you know, I can see him, what he's doing. So I thank God for that. With prayer, nothing... You know, with prayer, I believe God can heal me on his own, but it depends on how he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I just say, you know what? I said, well, however I come out, I'm still going to love everybody. I've seen a lot of stuff in my life, and I can sit up and I can put a video in my mind. You know, I listen to some of these old movies, and sometimes I can't sleep. I listen to the movies, and I could just see the movies, just like I could just see the movies. So I said, that's a good thing. So, but I'm glad you and John had a beautiful vacation. I'm glad y'all had a beautiful vacation.
Oh, thanks.
You need to take one more.
Ah, no, not anytime soon. I'm still recovering from this. All right, so I got a question. You mentioned Somebody Loves You, Baby. Now, I have that by Patti LaBelle, and then by Aretha.
Yeah, that's her. Yeah, Patti LaBelle.
Cause the other,
Somebody Loves
okay.
You, Baby.
Yeah, all right, because then I was thinking Aretha, mm-hmm. The only thing I could get was Baby, I Love You. All right, well, we'll get it on for you.
No. Oh, it's Patti LaBelle.
All right.
And I meant that from the bottom of my heart.
All right. We'll
I
do
really
it.
I really do.
We'll do
and
it.
Thank you for having such a wonderful show.
Well, thank you, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay, bye.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So, Patti LaBelle coming up next on WGN Radio. James, and that is Patti LaBelle. Somebody Loves You, Baby. You know who it is. And that Linda sends that out to James. And yes, we all do. All right, so waning moments of the show, if you want to get in here, by all means do. But can't leave without a little dose of 2020 news. I had somebody write and say, are these stories real? every last one of them, there's usually three a day, is absolutely real. It's the writing that is out of this world. But yes, you can look them up. Stories are absolute factual.
Shove on the Rocks, plus Breaking Bad and The Blight Before Christmas. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Like a box of rocks, Bowling Stones gather no toss. Forrest Dump and Dumper pinned for pushing big boulders off a cliff near Vegas. The federal judge called the clowns Beavis and Butthead, but let them off with community service, declaring it not a very serious crime, since the falling down fools did not hurt anyone. Her Honor did point out the pair of putzes presented a poor portrayal for a daughter of one of the defendants who'd been dragged along for the disgrace. Video of the village idiots on the rocks may forever enshrine their place on the media Mount Rushmore of morons. Putz the Magic Wagon. Saturday night reefer in Brooklyn as some dummy dope dealers carjacked by a cabal of crooks, cops claim. The SUV sap has a supposed stash of skunk on board, 150 pounds worth. But midnight aggress goes south when the half-baked hoods crash, ditching the drive dangling over the BQE. The designated dealer heads home and calls the fuzz, who lickety-split locate another alleged 500 pounds of pot. Butthead's busted. How the stench stole Christmas. SantaCon is slumming to town. No, not just the drunken day of debauchery, when the streets are snarled with Snark the Imperil. Hellraiser's Swing, a documentary just released, or better, escaped, about the spawn of this sloppy seasonal slaking of thirst in the worst way. The film delving into the depths of the ghosts of Christmas passed out. All they seem to want for Christmas is spew. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.
Kind of like the ghost of Christmas passed out. All right, so yeah, that's Steve Langford and Kevin Gershon at their finest. And so writing on it is just great. But again, the stories are absolutely fact. Oh, before I go, there's something I need to tell you, and it's really important if you keep up with the prosperity checks, because tonight's the night, so to speak. At 12:47 a.m., which is technically Thursday, which it is now. All right, so 12:47 a.m., in Chicago. I hope we haven't passed that already. I think we just did a few minutes ago. I'd say right's the time right now is to write that prosperity check as you speak. That's the deal on that. I think I'm late too, but I contend that it doesn't matter if you're a little late, whether it's early or late, as long as you're within 24 hours of the new moon. And if you're saying, what are you talking about now? Well, there is, among those into spiritualism and stuff, there is a belief that you can petition the universe for all manner of riches. Doesn't have to be financial, it can be any type of prosperity. And the universe will always listen, they're by your side, they're all there. However, on the new moon, right at the new moon, that's where the volume is tuned way up, and they take more care in what it is you are doing. So you write a prosperity check. It's not a real check. Go to MaryAnnWinkowski.com if you want to see exactly what the deal is. But you don't date it, and you write it, and then just wait. Now, it's interesting. Most of the people that I've told this about, and this is over, you know, like 50 years or whatever, have reported alarmingly good success. Not every month necessarily, but from time to time, something just completely out of the blue turned out to be very beneficial for them. But I have one friend, and sadly she died in August, but Barbara, good friend, Barbara Harvey, she absolutely was adamant, don't you dare do it, because every time she tried to do it, bad things happened to her. Yeah, talk about a paradoxical relationship. But the reality is, for most people, it brings no harm and may bring some riches. So I meant to do that earlier. I meant to tell you. So that is 12:47, so we're past that. So now would be a good time, because that's the fight, by the way. Marianne says you got to do it just before the new moon, and most people who are into this say you got to do it just after the new moon. So I don't think it really matters. A couple hours either way, you just want to make sure you're within 12 hours one way or another of the new moon. So there it is, and nothing particularly interesting about this moon, like an eclipse or anything like that. And the next full moon, in case you're, by the way, we are in Mercury retrograde, as you probably know, but we'll maybe talk more about that tomorrow night. The next full moon is coming up December 4th, the super cold moon. All right, and it probably will be super cold at least somewhere on December 4th, I would think. So that pretty much is it. Tomorrow, we have a slight delay Not long, but then again, who knows? Yeah. But I'm expecting it'll eat about a half hour of the show. So expect us at 10:30 Central, but be listening to the radio. That's what I'll be doing. And we'll talk after it. We'll continue to vote on the world's worst hit records and everything else that is on your mind. And until then, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. That's what makes the show easy for me to do. And that means I like it. So please call. So we'll do it all again tomorrow night. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.